Good afternoon. This is Stephen McCarthy from the McCarthy Project, and we are coming to you from Minneapolis, Minnesota. And I do have the honor of having Coach Scott Nagy of South Dakota State University, men's basketball, who has been making some pretty serious noise in the world of NCAA tournament basketball. And it's kind of fun because we're going to include South Dakota with Minnesota today. You know, maybe not tomorrow, but today we will. And how you doing today, Coach?
Very good, thank you.
Cool. Thank you for taking the time to come on the McCarthy Project. You have been making some very good noise in the world of NCAA tournament time that we actually play basketball in the Midwest and we actually have good players up here.
Well, and that's the whole key. I mean, I think the coaching part of it gets overrated. And the fact of the matter is, if you have good players, you're probably going to be pretty good. And if you don't, you probably won't be. So we've been fortunate enough to recruit some pretty good players, and obviously one out of Minnesota, Nate Walters, who was the best player ever to play here, and you know that just makes a big difference for a program.
You know, and it's kind of interesting because you know even Mike Miller. He's from South Dakota as well. He made a big splash in the NCAA, not the NCAA, but the NBA Finals this year as well.
Well, and he, you know, Mike got to play in the NCAA tournament too with Florida, and they had some great success. But, you know, I mean, South Dakota is very sparsely populated. You're talking 700,000 people. And Mike would probably be the most well-known player maybe probably ever to come out of here. But there are some good players that do leave here, and you know we recruit the Upper Midwest pretty hard, and it's our home, and we like players that are local players. They seem to be better for us.
Yes, because it's funny because I think the Midwest is really starting to make a big change, you know, in the world of basketball, because you know even. Like North Dakota, you know, they've kind of come on a little bit too, you know, and it's a lot of, you know, like Marquette and Wisconsin. All these are in the five-state area, you know, in Iowa and
yeah.
Minnesota. All these guys are really starting to make changes that I don't think most people are aware that we actually do play basketball in the Midwest and we actually have a tendency to be pretty good.
Well, I think, you know, number one, I mean, if you just look at the media, I mean, they're pretty heavily represented on the East and West Coast, and we're kind of considered flyover country out here, but there are still quite a few people that live out here, and, you know, I mean, there just is a lot of good basketball out here, and we don't have to go very far when you talk about the five-state area, Wisconsin, Minnesota, North and South Dakota and Iowa. I mean, we spend a lot of time in those states and recruiting very good players out of those states.
Cool. All right, so before we get too much further, you have kind of an interesting path. You were born in Illinois, went to college in Mississippi, and then ended up in South Dakota. So,
well, I was actually born in Texas, and my dad played for Lou Henson, who at the time was at Abilene, Hardin-Simmons, which is in Abilene, Texas. And he played there, and then he went on to be a graduate assistant there under Jack Hartman, who then went on to Kansas State. My dad, from there, went to Barton County, which is in Great Bend, Kansas, and I spent probably my formative years there from about 8 to 11 years old in Great Bend, Kansas. Then we moved to Missouri for a couple years. Dad continued to be a junior college coach. And then we moved to Champaign, Illinois, and I went to high school in Illinois. My dad was Lou Henson's assistant at Illinois for 18 years. So went to high school there, then went to school in Mississippi, back to the University of Illinois for a couple years as a graduate assistant, and got to be there when the University of Illinois went to the Final Four with the Flying Illini. And then Coach Jim Thorson hired me at South Dakota State in 1990 to come out and be his assistant.
And so that's how, because the thing that's interesting is I didn't realize that you had, your dad was a coach as well. Could you kind of fill us in about the aspect of being a coach's son? You know, how do you view that? Was it hard? Was it easy? You know, did you, I mean, obviously benefited from it, but how did you view it coming up as a kid?
I don't know if you view it any differently. Probably my formative years, in other words, when you talk about grade school and middle school, Dad was at junior colleges, in small towns, and there was still a lot of emphasis in those small towns about how well those teams did. And so even as a kid in Grade Bend, Kansas, and Union, Missouri, which aren't big towns, you still felt the pressure of, you know, Dad's team doing well or not doing well and people talking about it. And, when things were good, it was easy. When they weren't, it wasn't easy. And, you know, I've seen that with my own family and how it affects my children. We're at a little different level here, but I've seen that. And then, you know, at the University of Illinois, when Dad was there and he's an assistant, it's different, you know, because the assistant coach doesn't have to answer for things like the head coach does. But there's still pressure, and people still know who you are. And but at the same point, I got to be involved with a lot of great coaches, and I got to learn under my dad, who I think was an excellent coach. And I got to coach, for Coach Henson for a couple of years and learn a lot of good things. And so, it isn't any different. When you grow up, and if your dad's a plumber, I mean, you kind of know that stuff. And if your dad's a coach, that's what you know. And my dad didn't want me to go into coaching. He tried very hard to steer me away from it. I know why. I've seen the pitfalls. I understand it now after being in it for so long, why he didn't want me to go in it. But every job has pitfalls, too, and every job has pressure. The tough thing about coaching, and there are other jobs like this too, but you get into it knowing this. The tough thing about it is your successes and your failures are out there for everybody to see. And, other jobs don't necessarily have that, but coaching definitely has that. But you get into it knowing it, and so you don't complain about it.
Well, I think that the best thing that I can think of in my 10 years, and I've basically worked with high school athletes, and college, to a certain extent, but more on an individual basis. But when you start to gain the sort of the addiction to helping kids, and helping athletes, and you see them come in and they're looking at you and that you look back at them and you have a story that you can tell that can help them in their life, it is an interesting world when you get to feel that for the first couple of times, and you almost get addicted to it because you're like, man, I can help people doing this job.
Yeah. And I think regardless of what job you go into, you have to ask yourself, why am I going into it? What's the purpose? At the end of the day, when they put me in the ground, what are they going to say about me? And part of what they're going to say about me is how I did my job. You can either be in it just to win games and have everybody tell you how great they are, or you can be in it to, impact people's lives. But there's always a reason why people are in it. I think that yes, that can be addictive if you can see, that you might have some knowledge, you might have some skills that will help other people and help them be successful, then that's a lot of fun. It's a lot of fun to watch kids grow and develop, and I think even more so for me, it's more fun to watch them grow and develop as people. The basketball side of it's great, and we want to help them in that because we know it's important to them, and obviously it's important to us. But it's much more fun for me to watch guys grow as people. And I saw some guys yesterday. I played some golf with I say kids, but they're men now. Guys that I coached when I first started here, and they're in their late 30s, and we're going to get to the point where I may start recruiting their children. But that side of it, I maybe enjoy more than anything else is watching our guys grow and become leaders and husbands and fathers. Because at the end of the day, that's what's going to happen when they leave here is basketball is going to end for everybody sooner or later. And then they have to enter the rest of their lives.
Interesting the way we had kind of scripted out the interview before we got on the show, but I think I'm going to take a little direction. Talk to us about balance in life. I mean, you seem to, in just hearing your answers and how you're approaching, I would make a guess that you've thought about this idea of balance and how athletes should develop their whole life, not just basketball.
Well, I've been, number one, I've been forced to figure out balance because, when I came to South Dakota State in 1995 as the head coach, I was 28 years old. And I had no idea really what I was doing as a head coach. I didn't have any experience as a head coach. I was very fortunate to get hired. It was a tremendous Division II job at the time, one of the best in the country. And we won like crazy. I mean, in my first 3 years here, we were 75-10 in 3 years. And it was so easy. It was kind of a joke. It really was how easy it was. And really, all through the Division II years, I mean, we were Division II my first 9 years. 8 of those years, we went to the NCAA tournament, and we won, and we won, and we won. And then when we made the transition, we weren't eligible to go to the NCAA tournament for 5 years. We weren't in a league, and it was very difficult to recruit, and it was even harder to keep kids here because we were playing at a different level. We were getting our tails handed to us night in and night out, and we had some very, very tough seasons. And it was very hard on me. It was very hard on my family. And I had to figure out, why am I in this business? Because I didn't really ask myself that question the first 9 years, because it was so easy. And everybody had identified me with being a winner and being a great coach and being all this stuff. But my identity had just gotten wrapped up in winning. You know, that if we won, I felt good about myself. And if we didn't, I didn't feel good about myself. And so when you're winning 6 games and that's how your identity is, if you're wrapped up in your identity and winning and losing, you win 6 games, you don't feel very good about yourself. And so it was probably the best thing that ever happened to me as a human being, is I had to decide what was most important to me and what was going to be most important to me. If it was just winning, then I was going to make a lot of people miserable, myself most of all. And then if I did that, then obviously I was going to make my family, my wife, my children, it was going to be very hard on them. And so I had to figure some things out, really. And for me personally, I had to figure out, you know, was it more important for me to know God, or was it more important for me to win? And I think that's what God was trying to tell me. And so when I got that figured out, then I was able to get a little more balance in my life. Now, do I always have balance? My wife would probably be the first one to tell you, no, I don't. When we get into the season, I get pretty wrapped up in it, and it's very difficult because it's intense, and you want to win, and all of the, you know, because I've seen it 100 different ways. It's hard for kids to have a good experience at a university if they don't win. You can give them everything else, but if they're not successful on the floor, it's hard for them to feel like they've had a good experience. And so that stuff's important, but you know, just like coaching Nate, you know, Nate came here and obviously was a tremendous basketball player, but he and I've talked several times about this, that, you know, I talked to him about his education, and I said, Nate, you know, you might play in the NBA, you might have a chance to make a lot of money, but at the end of the day, basketball is going to end here pretty soon for you. Even if you play 10 more years, you're going to have most of the rest of your life to live. And it's going to be very important that you prepare yourself for that time when basketball is over. And so we work with all our guys on that. And for most of them, it ends when they're done here. And they go on to do their work. But I'm mostly want to help these guys be great leaders for their families, for their wives, for their children, and in their communities.
One of the biggest pieces in hearing you share the story is, how do you, because one of the things that I think when I'm doing this show and I'm talking to all these coaches and you see the heart of each one of the coaches, and they all have their way of communicating what they feel is most important to young people. But one of the pieces that I'm seeing in what I hear in you saying is that there is life as a whole. How do you actually get kids when they come in there, because they think they're the goods when they show up to play for you? Now you've got to be the bearer of bad news, so to speak, that, okay, you did all that work in high school, that may be good, but now I'm going to share you this whole picture of life. How do you kind of slowly walk them through it, or do you kind of, okay, here we go, guys, we're going after it?
Well, that starts in the recruiting process. I kind of tell them the truth before they ever get here in terms of the recruiting. You know, and there are some startling statistics in men's basketball, Division I level in particular, last year I looked, and I'm pretty sure of this, that within the first 2 years, okay, freshmen, sophomores, 44% of those guys transferred and went somewhere else, almost half, because they weren't getting what they wanted. And I shouldn't say it, because it's not always based on a kid. Sometimes it's based on a program, and there is we've seen some programs that are very abusive. You know, in those situations, I think kids should get out of those situations. But for the most part, you know, they're probably in programs that things weren't going exactly the way they want them to go, and so, well, I'm just going to go somewhere else. And I think that's what we kind of taught our kids, you know, that if you don't like it here, then go there, and there's just no commitment to anything anymore. And I'm very upfront about how difficult college basketball is going to be. And I don't care if you come to South Dakota State or if you go anywhere else, it's going to be hard, because you're going to play with a bunch of very good players. You're going to go through a very difficult adjustment period, having new coaches and just the social life in college and the academics of college, everything that goes with it. And there's going to come a point probably where, particularly your freshman year, it's going to be very difficult. And I am not interested in kids coming here and saying, when it gets tough, I'm just going to go somewhere else. We want our kids to work through that and commit to staying here. And, I, you know, of course, they all sit there in that chair and they shake their head and go, yeah, yeah, yeah. And then a year later, they're sitting in front of me bawling their eyes out. And I have to remind them, hey, remember when we had that conversation? Because now this is where the rubber meets the road. This is, you know, we need you to be committed. Because if the kid's not committed, how can I coach him? Really, eventually I'll probably run him off, because we're hard on our kids. We push them, and we ask a lot of them, and we're hard on them because we love them, and we want to help them develop. And you're not going to develop by people walking around and telling you how great you are all the time and patting you on the fanny and saying it's going to be okay. You know, I mean, a lot of times you grow through the very difficult times, and so we want kids that are committed. So we're very upfront about this. And if that kind of message resonates with a kid and his family, and they come here, then we know we've got a kid that will stay committed. But if that message doesn't resonate, then he's probably a kid we don't want to recruit anyway.
I have a follow-up question just right behind that, because what you just presented is a message that is not heard on ESPN. You know what I mean? And you're out there competing, you know, with the teams that are on ESPN consistently, and you've proven that you can get there with the type of players that you're talking about in your approach. How do you view the competition, you know, obviously without naming names, but how do you view the competition against the more kind of the flash in the pan, you know, the hair slicked back and they flew on their jet, you know, and all this kind of stuff?
Well, we're just not interested in flash here. We're just not. And because it's South Dakota State, we can't get it done with flash. You know, we don't have the budgets. We don't have. There are a lot of things we don't have. And I don't mean to give the impression that we don't have anything here, because we have some great things here. We've got a great place to play and a great locker room. And you know, so many schools to go on and on about all the great things they have. But what it comes down to in the end, that stuff wears off in about 15 seconds. And then it comes down to, who am I spending my time with? Who am I hanging out with? Who are my coaches? Who are my teammates? And so we want to recruit kids we want to coach and that aren't a pain in the tail all the time. And we want to recruit kids that our players are going to enjoy, because they're going to help us recruit the next generation. And so when we went through the Division I transition, I just finally came to that point where because we lost so many kids because it got tough. And I finally just decided that this is how I'm going to recruit. And most people do not. You're right. Most people don't recruit that way. Most people walk around and tell kids how great they are all the time and that they're going to start here and be the all-time leading scorer. And, you know, if they want to get these kids, they feel like that's what they got to say. If I have to say that to get kids, then we're not going to get those kids anyway, because that's not being honest. It's just not. And I think most people, when they recruit, I hear coaches laugh about this all the time. They say, we recruit them, and then when we get them on campus, we de-recruit them, which is what you were talking about, how, you know, you tell them how it really is.
Yeah.
I tell them how it really is up front. I want them to know up front, this is how it is. And I always say this to a kid. I would rather a kid come to South Dakota State and say, man, this is way better than what Coach Nagy said, than him say, man, this is way worse than what he said, which is, I think, is how most kids react once they get on campus. They're like, wait a minute, this is not what Coach said.
Well, see, the thing that I think that when you take a step back and you look at kids as they view you guys when they, you come out to recruit them, you know, as you get older, it's like you can see the salesman coming a mile away. You know what I mean? And so much you hear about how certain teams, you'll have, you know, seven, I mean, that's being an embellishment, say they have three players in the top 150 or, you know, three players in the top 50 and all that kind of stuff. It's usually always the same teams. But when it comes time to actually playing the game, you realize that there are differences and your approach can be just as good as their approach, even though you didn't get what I'd call are the names, if you will.
Yeah. And you know, I've just through the years, and, you know, I'm getting ready to start my 19th season, I've seen what approach in terms of how the enjoyment I get out of it, too. You know, I mean, we could try to recruit those kids, some of those kids, but they wouldn't be great fits here. It would be hard for me to coach them. I wouldn't enjoy it as much. And so, you know, the kind of kids that we're getting now are the kids that message resonates with, and we're enjoying coaching them. You know, and we've been successful. I mean, we want to go to the NCAA tournament and win games and push the envelope in this, and we've seen teams at our level that can do it, and we feel like that we can do it. We want to be a nationally recognized team, and we think we can do it by, you know, by getting kids that are skilled and tough and want to be good teammates, and that kind of message resonates with, and we can beat teams that have the so-called, you know, and I don't know who ranks these kids anyway, you know, it's top 100, top 150, because, you know, I mean, it all changes in the end anyway. Now, sometimes those kids, it turns out they're right, but sometimes it turns out they're wrong. I mean, nobody had Nate Walters in their top 1,000, and the guys playing in the NBA was the 37th or 38th pick overall, and so they can be wrong. It's our job to go out and evaluate and try to find those kids that we think, number one, want to develop into players, and number two, that have the potential to develop into players.
Because that leads back to this whole world of potential, you know, and I'm in the top 150, you know, because, you know, when you're involved, it's funny because I've been involved in the strength coach area for 10 years working with young athletes in the Minneapolis-St. Paul area, and so I've seen a lot of athletes come through the door that were basically there for social reasons. And at the beginning of my career, I was very like, okay, that's not the reason why we're here. We're here to win, you know. But I went through that same transition where I was finally realizing, oh, there is a value to have friends and to make this a fun experience. We don't have to be just kicking everybody's rear all the time. But one of the things that happens as things change and people's body types change, like I had coached actually Rashad Vaughn when he was in the fifth and sixth grade. I was one of the assistant coaches for him. And at the time, he was 5'10", could shoot, could dribble, and he could, I mean, the same thing he could do now at 6'6". But it was amazing to see how his life changed just by him growing. Now, some kids don't grow, but they're just as good as basketball player as Rashad Vaughn is.
Well, I mean, I don't know how it all ties together. I agree with you that, you know, it just can't be all work, you know, and the kids not enjoy themselves. But I do know that at the end of the day, you know, they say they want to have fun. Yep. And I know the best way to have fun is to win and whip people. I mean, that's fun. But the problem with that is the only way to get to that point, you know, unless you're a genetic freak, which there are very few of those. And so the only way that you know, and I look at South Coast State in particular, the way that we're going to whip people is we're going to have to work hard. We're going to have to work really hard. And that's not fun for most people. And so you got to decide what kind of fun do you want to have. And, you know, I've just heard it said, you know, that the pain of regret is way, way greater, you know, than the pain of discipline. And so, you know, we want to develop the pain of discipline, and we want to recruit kids that love to be in the gym and want to get better, because it doesn't matter. We can develop all kinds of programs, and you could do the same in weight training. You could develop tremendous weight programs, and you could put these kids on them. But if they themselves don't have a desire to get better or get stronger and develop, but we have a desire for them. They're never going to develop into the kind of player they could be. And so, you know, what we want are kids that just have that desire, that want to be the very best they can be, and then we can help them. We can help them do that. But, you know, I mean, as a coach, I can't be in the gym. I mean, I'm limited in the amount of time I can be in the gym with a player. And if he's only in the gym when I'm in the gym, they'll never be a great player here. And that's, you know, Nate really helped us change that by showing people what it took to be a player, because Nate spent hours and hours and hours in the gym, and that's the best way to do it.
All righty, we're going to go to a quick break, and we'll be back to continue our discussion on the world of balance of life in sport.